1 Corinthians 13, we've spent a little bit of time here, and we're now in verse 5, but I'm going to recap just the verse. So it says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. And we are today going to focus on irritable and resentful. And I feel like that's a good place for us to be in today. So I don't have to define irritability, do I? Irritability is something that I think we all understand. But what I thought was impressive when I read the definition of being irritable, it was having or showing a tendency to be easily annoyed or made angry. And that's it. You know, like we all know what irritability is, but it's like, why? And this definition kind of, it really shows that it's very quickly being annoyed or angered. And there's a lot of reasons for being irritable, right? One, you know, that there are simple reasons, right? Being stressed or being overtired can lead us to being irritable. Those are probably not necessarily all tied very spiritually. It's just our physical bodies get to the point where they are just drained and they're done and we get irritable. We get angry with each other very quickly. Then there's the, according to research, too much caffeine or sugar. You know, I thought it was the other way around, right? But what about the crash, right? Have you ever noticed that you've had to like throw down the coffee after coffee after coffee because you get to the point where the caffeine has worn off from the sugar or from the coffee, and then you start becoming irritable because those things actually lead us. It's an unnatural swing in one direction, and whenever we swing in one direction, we must kind of swing back the other way. And then there are the more serious things like mental health disorders that can cause irritability. But then there's things like being inconvenienced that make us irritable. This is one that I know a lot about. And God, it's funny because God has given me an open window this past month to being irritable. And I only really saw the irony this past week as I was preparing for this week, realizing that this week was about love being irritable or not being irritable. And it's like one thing after another. For those of you that don't know, the last 2.5 months we've dealt with our flooring issue where we had a damage to our floor because of a toilet overflow. And in one way or another, we've been inconvenienced one thing after another after another. And so we had to go on a vacation, or we got to go on a vacation for 10 days. We came back for them to do the floors. We came back and they didn't do a good job. And so then we had to get out again. And so since Tuesday, we've been out of the house at another place here in Durham. And so we're like aching to get back home. And it just causes this friction within ourselves, this irritability that every little thing, this is not home, every little thing about it annoys us a little bit, annoys me a little bit. I won't speak for Kelly. And then last night, I realized that the tire on my van was starting to get flat and there was a screw that had punctured the tire and was in there. And so this morning, I had the irritability of not being able to drive here and stay here and then have Kelly and the kids meet. I had to go back home after prayer, pick them up, or go back to the house, get back. And when I got here for prayer this morning, I was the first one here and I didn't have my keys. And it was like one thing after another. And I'm like, God, what are you doing? It's little simple things. And what God had showed me, and he started really showing me this over the last, really probably the last month, is when things get inconvenient, and the prophetic word that God will interrupt us, when we get interrupted, it's an opportunity for us to stop and say, God, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to do? Because I keep finding myself in this place of being able to be annoyed and frustrated, annoyed and angry. What is it that you're doing that you want to get my attention on? And what is it that you want to say? And so there's some psalm that I think really, really focus on this. In Psalm 55, 1-3, how do we handle these inconveniences? How do we deal with the normal aggravations of being inconvenienced? David says, give ear to my prayer. This is verse 1-3. Give ear to my prayer, O God, and hide not yourself from my plea for mercy. Attend to me and answer me. I am restless in my complaint and I moan because of the noise of the enemy. I love that line, the noise of the enemy. How much more defining of inconvenience is noise? Because of the noise of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked, for they drop trouble on me, and in anger they bear a grudge against me. Attend to me and answer me. Here David is looking at it and saying, these things have happened, so now I must press into God, because these things might get the best of me if I don't. If I just let them happen in me, guess what's going to happen? I become bitter. I become now a fountain expressing these things of irritability, expressing these onto other people, putting them on other people. But if I don't, if I focus and if I close in and get comfortable with God and say, God, all these things, this restlessness that I have as I complain and I moan because of this noise that the enemy has brought against me, I need to press into you and I need to hear you. And then in Psalm 25, 11 through 15, it says, for your name's sake, O Lord, pardon my guilt, for it is great. Who is the man that fears the Lord? Him will he instruct in the way that he should choose. His soul shall abide in well-being, and his offspring shall inherit the land. The friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him, and he makes known to them his covenant. My eyes are ever toward the Lord, for he will pluck my feet out of the net. If we keep our eyes on the Lord, what does it say? He says that the friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him. When you get annoyed and aggravated, what's the first thing that you want to do? Okay, after like saying mean things and throwing things and that kind of stuff, right? You want to tell somebody. Like, can you believe that they said this or they did this or they, you know, like it's, you've got to get it off your chest. And here it is, and it says the friendship of the Lord is for those who fear him. He offers us the opportunity to go and vent and say, I have these things that have happened. What do I do? How do I respond? What should I do? But that's not what we're going to focus on this morning. We're going to focus on the final reason, or I'm sure there are probably more, but what the Lord showed me, one of the final reasons for being irritable is harboring unforgiveness. In Proverbs 16, verse 32, it says this, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. I love this imagery because the imagery is, I mean, this is written by people that knew war, right? I don't know if this was a Psalm of David, but if this was written by David or any of them at this time that would have written this, they're familiar with battle. They're familiar with enemies going against each other. And what happens, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty. If you think about the mighty, right? David had mighty men, men that he trusted with his life, the men that would go to battle and do things that normal men could not do. These were mighty men. And what he's saying here is, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, better than them. And he who rules his spirit is greater than he who takes a city. That you can have great conquest. You can be a great warrior. You can be mightier than any of the men in battle. And yet, if you can control your anger, be slow to anger, control your spirit, not let yourself get beyond where you should be when these things of irritation come up, you are greater than a warrior. Before we look at the human condition, I think it's important to take a look at the characteristic of God that is most represented here. God is not irritable. He is not easily angered or annoyed. And that's something that I think we have a hard time realizing, or we take for granted. One of those two things ends up happening and taking over, right? We either think that that's not necessarily the case, or we just take for granted the fact that he is not easily angered or easily annoyed. Within 40 days of Moses going up on Mount Sinai, what happened to Israel? 40 days, Israel decides that Moses is just gone. We don't know what happened to him, but we need someone to follow. Never mind this smoking mountain right here in the distance that we're standing in the foothill. We need to be able to see God. I'm sorry. God just spoke to you, and your leader just went up on a mountain, and it is still actively smoking as you stand there, and you are restless. He was only there for 40 days. So within that 40 days, they have made a decision to say, hey, you know what? I know what to do. We need someone to look at. We need a God that we can see and follow. And they go to Aaron and they say, you got to make us a God. We have to have something. And so Aaron collected all the gold and they fashioned a cow, a calf, so that they could worship the calf because they wanted to worship a God. We, when left to our own, we desire something that gives us comfort, immediate response to our frustration, to our annoyance, to our aggravation, to our irritation. In Exodus 34, that sets the stage for what we're going to read now. In Exodus 34, this is once they've actually done this, Moses goes down, he sees that they're worshiping this calf. They hear the sound of singing, and that he comes in and he sees that they're all worshiping this idol. And here he is. He's carrying the stone tablets that God himself has chiseled out of the rock and has written on it with his finger. And Moses, what does he do? He throws them down because of the anger that he has because of what these people that he has been chosen to lead are doing. And then we get to this place where Moses is now interceding for the people, saying, God, don't be angry with them. And then in verse 34, starting in verse 4, or chapter 34, verse 4. So Moses cut two stone tablets like the first, as God had instructed. And he rose early in the morning and he went up to Mount Sinai. And the Lord, as the Lord had commanded him, and he took in his hand two tablets of stone. The Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands or thousands of generations, forgiving iniquity and transgression of sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting on the iniquity of the fathers and the children, the children's children to the third and fourth generation. How does God tells Moses that he's going to meet with him. And Moses asked for God to reveal his glory to him. Reveal yourself to me. And God says, well, I can do it, but I have to do it in this way. Because if you see my face, you will surely die. Any man that sees my face will surely die. And so he tells him, he gives him instructions to go up in this cleft of the rock and I will pass before you. But he shields him with his hand. God shields Moses' eyes with his hands until he passes by, and then he is able to see his back, right? And how he introduces himself, first he explains his name, Yahweh. I am the Lord. He tells him who he is, and then the first thing he tells him about him is he says, a merciful God, gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Now we read lots of other passages in the Old Testament, and we think, well, God's got to be very quick to his anger. Because he deals with people very, very decisively. They're never making that mistake again. Well, because they're never going to be again. Because they've been dealt with. Right? And so we think that he is quick to anger. That he is just reactive to this issue. But he's not. He tells us that he's slow to anger. He has dealt with these people. He says, a stiff-necked people that I will lead. And here we have a God that goes with us through things that we think sometimes is going to be angry when we tell him, when we go before him and we say, God, I messed up. God, I did this thing. I said this, I did this. Whatever it might be, we think that God now is angry at us, as if he didn't know when we did it, that we did it. But here, God is slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. And then you think about the expression of who God is through Jesus, the man, God. In Matthew 16, Jesus has ample opportunity to be easily annoyed. And I love this story. I think it's hilarious because I can relate. I think I would be in this same literal boat with these men as what they are here. And that's why I think it's so funny. And in verse 6, it says, Jesus said to them, "Watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And they began discussing among themselves, saying, "We brought no bread." But Jesus, aware of this, said, "Oh, you of little faith, why are you discussing among yourselves the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive? Do you not remember the five loaves of the five for the 5,000 and how many baskets you gathered? Or in the seven loaves of the 4,000? And how about the baskets you gathered? How is it that you fail to understand that I did not speak about bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but about the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It's so funny because, you know, I fail to remember that Jesus is God and man. And so he knows these things. He says these things from a God standpoint. And yet he's with men. And when he says these things and does these things, most of it just goes right over their head. And we're the same way. God will pour into us and share something with us. And a lot of times it just goes right over our head. And if God was more like a man than himself, he would have given up on us a long time ago. He would have looked at it and said, "You guys just don't get it. You've got to listen. You've got to understand that what I'm telling you is deeper than your stomachs can carry you. I'm not talking about bread. I'm not talking about what it is that you need in this moment right now. What I'm talking about is the things that are eternal, these things that are deep. The leaven of the Pharisees, you got to be careful for the thing that gets planted and spreads. This rumor system that they have established, this blame system, this try to catch you in things that they have. You got to be careful. Because they're seeking out trapping you as they have tried to with me as well." Harboring unforgiveness. You know, we've all gone through painful situations. At least those of us that are still breathing. If you're older than a certain age, you've gone through a painful situation. Some of us have gone through traumatic experiences. What do you do? What do you do when someone close to you lies to you? Or when you're rejected? When you get called out and you're humiliated and embarrassed? When life hurts, something unfair happens, and that pain sinks down deep. What do you do? And what do you do once the pain is there? How do you handle it? I wrote a little thing called My Pain, and it's more just an expression of what I have seen and what I have felt in this situation. Starts out that the damage is done. The pain hit hard, and now it's like a dart that was thrown right into my heart. The pain was so traumatic that I can't help but focus on it. The more I focus on it, the more my anger boils. I justify my intention as not wanting to allow this pain to happen ever again. So I must study it and I must know it thoroughly. Unknowingly, I push the dart a little bit deeper every time I dwell on it. I don't dare remove it for fear that the person who threw it or possibly even someone else might pick it up and use it against me again. Now the dart is no longer visible. My thoughts have shifted to other things, but the location around the wound, that area is ultra sensitive, and I can't bear the thought of someone touching it. Anyone who gets close to it sends off alarm signals to my brain, initiating emergency protocol. Watch out, he's getting close. Closer, too close. Before I realize it, my brain raises the DEFCON level to 5. War is imminent. Everyone knows the best defense is a good offense. So I launch my offensive to ensure the enemy understands that I mean business. They need to know that they are no longer in neutral territory. They have invaded my airspace, and I cannot allow it. Boom. Phew. That was a close call. I was nearly hurt again. This happens in our life, where we get wounded, we get hurt, and when we don't handle it right, it festers. It gets infected. We get gangrene. We pick at it. We get annoyed by it. We must study it because we never want to get hurt again. In Psalm 56, I'm going to read the whole chapter. It says, "Be gracious to me, O God, for man tramples on me all day long. An attacker presses me. My enemies trample on me all day long. For many attack me proudly. When I am afraid, I must put my trust in you. In God, whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? All day long they injure my cause. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They stir up strife. They lurk. They watch my steps as they have waited for my life. For their crime will escape. For their crime will they escape. In wrath cast down the people, O God. You have kept count of my tossings. Put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? Then my enemies will turn back in the day when I call. This I know, that God is for me. In God whose word I praise, in the Lord whose word I praise, in God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? I must perform my vows to you, O God. I will render thank offerings to you, for you have delivered my soul from death, yes, my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of life. In God I trust." You know, it's written on our currency, "In God we trust." And as for our nation, it's become less and less of a meaning. But for us as a people, for us as Christians, for us as the people of God, it is something we can stand on. "In God I trust, I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me?" When we cover and hide and protect ourselves, what we really should do is we should open ourselves up to the Lord. And we should take that dart and we should lay it at his feet and say, "In you I trust with this. Because you are slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love." Hebrews 4, verse 14 and 16, it says, Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. And I want to add, too, that he has also been rejected as we have. He has been hurt as we have. He has had those darts shoved into his heart as we have. Yet without sin, let us then with confidence draw near the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. He's there to help us. He's there as we draw close. He wants us to come to his throne and lay those things down. And not only is he going to be able to just sympathize with you, but he has empathy for you because he's been there. He's experienced that pain that has been in your heart. He knows not just of you, but he knows of your pain. And then the second part of the verse that we're looking at, it says, love is not resentful. And in the NIV, it says it keeps no record of wrong. I love that. Keeps no record of wrong. There is nothing worse than to hear the words, really? What about when you, in the middle of an argument? Anybody ever experienced that? Something has happened. Yeah, all the married people are smiling. Everybody that's not married is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Friendships, I'm sure this has happened. But if you're in the middle of an argument and they pull out this thing, they pull out that instance where you did something, even if it relates to the current situation, you thought you were already forgiven. You'd already said sorry. You'd already, done whatever needed to be done to make sure everything is good. And here in the middle of it, they basically lay down the hammer and say, nope, remember when you did this. Keep no record of wrong. And sometimes I think sometimes I think that I have a book of wrongs that I've kept really well. If there's a record I'm going to keep this record of wrongs until God shows me, what are you doing? Why are you going to hold this? Why are you going to care about these things that have happened to you? We have become self-defense experts. Whether it's protecting the old wounds, those darts that we've sunken down deep, or whether it's gathering ammo for future battles, those things that people have done against us, I'm going to hold that because you know what? I might need it one day. We specialize in pain avoidance. We're really good at protecting ourselves. Unforgiveness waits in our heart as a guard dog, protecting us from ever feeling that pain we once experienced ever again. It pops its head up over and over again, ruining our relationships, causing more pain than it protects against. And worst of all, it insulates us from experiencing the joy that comes from allowing love himself, God, Jesus Christ, to live out of us in order to heal others of their brokenness. Worst of all, it insulates us from experiencing the joy that comes from allowing love himself to live out of us in order to heal others of their brokenness. In Proverbs 17, in verse 9, it says, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. Have you ever been the one in a situation where an offense happens and you have an opportunity? You have an opportunity to be offended. You have an opportunity to take offense. And God shows you and you cover the offense. Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. In Psalm 103, the Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. He will not always chide, nor will he keep his anger forever. He does not deal with us according to our sin, nor repay us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his steadfast love toward those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far does he remove our transgressions from us. As a father shows compassion to his children, So the Lord shows compassion for those who fear him. This morning, we have about 8-7 minutes left. I think the Lord wants us to take inventory of our heart and look at two areas. One, do we have areas in our heart that were painful? Things that we have not forgiven others for. Things that we haven't laid before God and asked for his forgiveness for harboring. Things that have been protection devices for us. Maybe for years. Maybe for decades. That they have become so ingrained in us that they are who we are. Not just part of something that has happened in our lives. They've become who we are. That he wants to identify those things and say, those things that you think are protecting you, what they're doing is they're keeping you from fully showing my love and allowing my love to work through you. They might be protecting you, so you think, but what it's causing more pain for others because of that pain that you're trying to protect yourself from. I believe God wants to point those things out in our heart. And I believe he wants to identify areas that we've made lists of things that have happened against us. And he wants us to lay them before his feet and be forgiven for it. So what I want to do is I'm going to have about a couple of minutes of silence where we seek our hearts. And then Jim and anybody in the worship team that can come up and just play through some songs. And I want us to really, really seek him and have him expose those things. Because one, he no longer wants you to carry them. And two, he wants to heal you and he wants to start loving through you in a way that he can't until he has dealt with those things. Father, we take a moment. Show us, Lord, what is in our heart. Show us where we need to forgive. Show us where we need to be healed, Lord. I know who you are. I've seen every aspect of your life, and I know everything. And that pain is not who you are. I desire more for you. I desire for you to live out of freedom, to love, to open your heart. Yes, it's scary opening your heart and being willing to be hurt, maybe even hurt in the same way. But I am always with you. I love you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. You can trust me. that void that is left where the pain once was, I will fill. I will pour in my spirit. All you have to do is ask. I love you, says the Lord.